from ComedyFilmNerds.com with Graham Elwood.
The Floating Force of Pandora, ever heard of it?
And Chris Mancini.
What clan are you from?
This is the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast.
It's not that great.
This is not the ninja movie I signed up for.
Cousin Eddie's package.
Why can't this happen?
I got nothing going on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Film Nerds. We're just going to call it a bonus ep. We don't know what number this is right now.
No, we don't know when it's dropping either.
We don't have no idea. We don't know anything about this show.
No, we just told the podcast company to randomize it. Just drop it whenever you want.
Yeah, we just turned on the equipment. We're going to see what happens. So, yeah, this is actually, this episode was has been spurned by the fans themselves.
Yeah, spurned means pushed away.
Pushed?
Yeah.
Spur.
You mean inspired, I think, what you were thinking of.
This show's been insulted.
You know what?
By
you might be, after 30 minutes, you might be right anyway.
Inspired by. Dude, it's late. I've done three shows today.
Poorly.
Poorly. Each one more badder than the other. I've spurned myself from podcasting. Come on. Now I'm getting the right definition of the word.
So, yeah, you actually, you did Nerdist, and we did one this morning, and now this is the special one, because it's, like you said, a fan generation. Hey, we don't know enough about you guys. You guys should be interviewed on your own podcast.
Yeah.
And who better to do it?
Who better to do it than one of our original interns.
Yes, and still, chef.
And chef and dessert maker.
Yes.
Who also is still, you're still doing some stuff for us.
Every once in a while.
Yeah, he takes care of our press screenings and all the important stuff that we don't want to do.
That's what interns are for.
Yeah.
Slave labor. We have him make t-shirts in a sweatshop.
My fingers are bleeding as we speak.
Yeah, yeah. And we give him a quarter a week. Yes. And I think it's a fine salary to pay a young man who's trying to break into show business. Welcome to the industry, asshole. Here's some stuff.
That's like he's a PA.
He's a PA. We're going to throw a menu at him.
Callback
from who knows when.
Yes.
Okay, so this is, let's introduce him.
This is, no, I don't think we should.
Because we're both afraid we don't know how to pronounce his last name correctly? is that what it is?
All right, I think, because I got it wrong the first time, so I think I know what it is.
All right, what is it?
It's Tahiya. Bentahia.
Bentahia. You fucking asshole. God damn it. This fucking guy. No, I think you said Ben wrong.
Yeah, that's what this is. It's Bean.
It's Daniel is how it's pronounced.
Daniel. That's an odd pronunciation for Ben.
Now, what's the origin of Tahiya?
It's Croatian. Something, yeah. It's, yeah, one of those.
This is bad. Maybe we shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, let me see if I can do a Croatian accent. Hello, I'm from Dubrovnik, I am.
It's wow, like it's, a family reunion.
It's just like, wow, it's just like that doctor on ER.
Yes, it is. I actually, when I was a kid, it was all Yugoslavia. But when I lived in Germany as a kid, we drove through Italy, and then we took a ferry across the Adriatic Sea into Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. And had our car broken into. So, thanks.
I don't know if it was Ben's name that did it.
Yes. They said it's Tahiya, and they threw a rock into our car, and it was really messed up.
This is the episode that...
We need to do this. Actually, I want to clarify.
Please do.
What spurn means.
Yeah.
Ben is the first... He's not our first ever intern, but
that was Sharon.
That was
who
Sharon.
Also did a great job.
She did a great job. But Ben was our first intern that was a fan.
Right, they listened to the show.
Sharon, didn't even have the podcast up when Sharon was our intern. Mm-hmm. We were the first time when we said, hey, we could use an intern. Ben was the first guy to respond to us.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember when he came in for the interview, he's like, oh, hey, there's the gargoyle. I remember that very distinctly.
It's like walking into Disneyland.
It really is. It's this magical place.
Yeah.
So
they're the pirates you guys always talk about.
What a bunch of dicks. So I have a couple, before you start asking us the questions, which is what this whole episode is about, I've got a couple for you, smart guy. No.
How do you feel about menus being thrown at you?
What's, have you ever thought about what your problem is? No. No. I'm so punchy. I'm talking all day. No, how did you find the show?
It was one of those, you know, oh, if you like this on iTunes, you'll like this podcast as well. And it just happened to be the first episode that you guys did. I listened to the first, whatever, 10 minutes it was. It was like a
15-minute episode.
Yeah, it was a really short one. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I just kept coming back. And I think around episode 15, you said...
Yeah, we need some help.
We need... Yeah.
We don't know what we're doing.
We're just floating to the top here. And we don't, that's the best we can do. Someone needs to steer the ship a little bit.
That's exactly what we were doing. Episode 15. Wow, that was a while ago.
Yeah, it was when the IRS comes calling, we need a fall guy.
Yeah,
that was the discussion.
Oh, yeah, we put a lot of stuff in Ben's name, because this is such a shell corporation.
Yes, I mean, there's books, and then there's the books that are in the safe.
Well, it's like I just, J. Edgar, he has a secret file case that's what we use Ben for.
Sure.
You know, we find out that...
he's very charming, gets the law off our backs.
Yeah, you know what I mean? When one of the Kennedys was screwing around, J. Edgar had some tapes, and so we do that with other podcasts. Like Chris Hardwick? Oh, I think I need to be a guest on your show. And guess what?
And guess what? He'll be on again soon.
Secret file. Yes. That Ben keeps. Ben keeps a secret file.
Podcasters.
What other podcasts do you listen to?
Doug Loves Movies, of course. And then a lot of political ones. I went to school for political science. That's when I interned for you guys. My boyfriend was, getting on my back about, you're going to school, you're not working, you got to get an internship or something. So I, hear you guys literally the very next day, we need an intern. I was like, well, this is exactly what he was talking about. So yeah,
clearly. At what point did he go, that's not what I meant?
Yeah, you go, no, going to a garage with those two idiots is not... We're talking about a real company where work actually transpires. Not guys making kitten hand jokes 24/7. Do I have any other questions?
I don't know. check your binder.
Check my binder. What are the political ones you listen to?
I listen to Rachel Maddow. I listen to one called Armstrong Getty out of the Bay Area.
Uh-huh. Listen to Jimmy Doris, Pop and Pop. Wait, what's that? Pop and Politics. Yeah,
I've listened to that one before. Yeah, it's lot to listen to.
Yeah,
not gonna lie, I'm 7-8 episodes behind on this one. Yeah. I hear Mike Schmidt came back. I'm very excited.
Yes,
to hear that
Mike Schmidt's back. It's a lot of good stuff is happening.
Yep, his chapters for the book are amazing too.
Oh God,
we're so excited to have this book come out. It's gonna be. Folks,
I feel like we shouldn't talk about it anymore because I feel like we're almost shut up. Of course you write your own book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it is pretty great.
It's awesome. It is. There's no film book like this.
No. And we thought it's even larger than we thought. It's not like us thrown together one of those books with a lot of pictures. It's going to be over 80,000 words.
Totally.
This is going to be a real film book.
Can't wait. All right. Do we want to just
Let's do it. Let's turn it over to Ben. Ben's going to interview us with the questions that you guys generated, and we will answer them to the best of our abilities, or we will deny to answer them.
I have an attorney here, I might... I'm going to be a lot of covering the mic and leaning over.
refuse, deny, take the fifth. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out.
I cannot confirm nor deny that...
A lot of stammering like Rick Perry's here with us today.
I just can't recall.
Yeah, I'm just going to those vaguey questions. Well, I want
to
say...
First of all, we got to get people back to work. That's what we got to do. Yeah. We got to get people back to work.
I commend you for your service, Ben. Yeah. And I want to say that as an American and a parent... Yeah.
And the government spends too much.
Yeah. And I'm going to make gas $1 a gallon. Yeah. So, yes, these questions were... You guys posted them on the Facebook fan page.
And on Twitter, too.
And on Twitter. And here they are.
And emailed Ben directly, a few of you.
Some of them emailed Ben directly.
It's easy to get a hold of
Ben. Do you have a Twitter handle?
I don't.
But you're on Facebook.
I am on Facebook.
Okay, Ben's on Facebook.
So anybody that can spell Tahaya correctly, I will accept your friend request.
An easy way to find him, he's one of the admins on our Facebook fan page. So just you can just click on his picture.
All right. Our first question comes from Steven Kraskowski. He wants to know the CFN podcast origin story.
Oh, that was easy. That was Graham going a year and a half going, we got to do a podcast. And it's like, well, we don't have a microphone.
Let's find an engineer.
No, I got one. My voiceover agent made me get one. So now we have one.
That's right. That's right. We will go into the specifics of that.
Yeah.
I was a good year or so of just being, well, here, first of all, I'll go way back. I'll go back to I hosted a podcast called Comics and Combat on the defunct Now Live network, where they were trying to start a podcast network and sort of social networking site.
So, how'd that work out?
Oh, it worked out great. That's why no one's ever heard of it. But it was, I mean, it was kind of a cool idea. It needed, I don't know. They were still kind of holding on to, we would live stream the show.
Right.
So we would get people writing and calling in, which was kind of cool. And then, of course, you could download it. And it was just called Comics in Combat. And I came up with the idea after my second time going to Afghanistan. And every comic that I knew that had gone over there, we would see and meet. Like, we'd run into each other, and we both knew we'd been over there. And we would immediately sort of have this bond. Even if we didn't go over there together, we were both like, holy shit. And we would trade these crazy stories about the stuff that happens over there. So I was like, I'm gonna start this. And I ran into a comic by the name of Nadine Rajabi, who had a show. She's like, and I was like, what's this? And this was 06. So I was like, podcast had just sort of kind of started. And I was like, oh, I think Jimmy Pardo just started one.
Right, right. He was one of the first people.
He was one of the first people to do it. And I think he did his in 05 or 06. And so I started doing that show, and it was really cool. And I'd bring comics on, and we'd interview them. I don't even know where the shows are. I don't even know they exist anymore. If anyone can track them down, love to know where they're at.
On a side note of that, we actually did shoot a pilot for this for the show, which we hope to get up next year. You'll actually see some episodes.
It was really cool. Yeah, the pilot we shot was just sort of a kind of a Charlie Rose style interview show, basically taking the elements from the podcast and just putting it on TV. So I had done that podcast, and I was starting to just be guests on, like, I would go on Pardo's show, and then, you know, we started the website in...
Yes, and a lot of people don't know this if you just listen to the podcast. The website started about a year and a half before the podcast.
Oh, yeah, it started in April of 08 is when the site went live.
And, yeah, and it was pretty much written articles in a store and an unsearchable site. It was really thrown together.
Labyrinth.
Confusing interface. you couldn't get to anything you wanted. And then, as we got more proficient at it, we upgraded pretty much everything from the site to the cart to... just the whole interface and the search. And, I'd say about every 6 months or so, there's some kind of tweak or upgrade, and that will always continue.
So then we started the site April of 08. And by that time, and it was summer of 08 that I started going back on the road a lot, primarily with Doug Benson. And I started to see Never Not Funny fans, the way they would come out on the road. And be like, oh my God, and Bag of Corn Friend, and say all the things that Jimmy and I would joke about on the show. And then I just started going, man, podcasting, I started to see like the difference it was making. And then Doug got a show, and then everyone started getting shows.
Sure.
And I kept saying, Chris, we got to do one.
Yeah, and for us, the podcast was never about just doing a podcast. We always saw the podcast as part of the Comedy Film Nerds brand and the way we, we'll distribute short films. There's written articles. We have the book coming out. It's really just one piece of the giant puzzle for us.
Yeah, when Chris and I first came up, decided to create the site, we wanted to make this big thing, this brand, as he just said, so we could talk about movies, make them, distribute them, like we wanted to make and make
one stop shop everything.
Yeah, everything.
And really, I think we even have it on the Facebook page. We wanted to criticize and create.
Yeah, and then I started doing. I had this voiceover agent, and I was like going. I started going on the road a lot, and they were saying, you can email in your auditions. And they told me to buy a Snowball microphone, that's actually behind you, Ben. And and so I learned through how to make little MP3s from, I learned how to use like GarageBand and all that stuff. And I was like, Chris, I can do this. Let's just do it. And that first day we were just like, let's just make it and put it up there. And we were like talking, Chris, you kept saying in beta, you're like, this is a beta testing show. And people emailed in like, what does that mean? And I was like, yeah, nerd, stop fucking tech heading these people to death with this beta testing shit. So that's, yeah, that was a long answer to that question. Yeah. This show's going to go on forever.
Yeah, maybe it might be more than 30 minutes.
All right, next question.
All right, next. Michael Kalbing would like to know, what do you know about the comedy and or film business that you wish you had known when you started?
That's a great question.
That is a really good question.
And the problem is we still don't know.
Yeah, yeah,
we really don't have the answer. Yeah, I think here's, you know, a friend of mine once said, it's show business. Pay attention to the word business. It has more letters.
Yeah.
And really, that's, if there's one thing I would say is that, I think both of us, we didn't pay as much attention to the business aspect as we should have. You know, creative people are like, oh, I just want to be creative and, you know, let the agents and managers take care of all the business stuff. And that is the number one mistake you can make. You have to manage your own career. You have to be your own agent. You have to be your own business manager. You have to do all those things yourself.
You have to look at it like you're running a small business. You are. And the product that you're selling is you, or your scripts, or your films that you shoot, or your comedy, or whatever. But you are running your own business. And you have to look at it that way. And I totally agree with Chris. I wish I would have been more coming into it. I wish I would have studied more like marketing classes.
Or how to put a press kit together, things like that. Yeah. That's all the stuff that, like, oh, I don't need to know that. No, you really do.
I think, honestly, in every college that has an acting program and a filmmaking program or any creative writing,
there should be a promotional class.
There should be a marketing class. Yeah. Covers general tips of marketing, but specific marketing to that field. Because, man, I just was like, oh, you know, now, I'll get famous and then my agents will handle it.
Oh yeah, the market will find me. You know, that's the illusion pretty much. And there's also there's a myth in Hollywood too, and it's told a lot. It's called, you know, the myth of the angel agent. And that's that, you know, if I work really hard, I come to Hollywood and I'm really talented, then an agent will pick me up and then submit me for jobs or pick me up and get me to that next level. And the truth is agents don't do that. Mm-hmm. Agents pick you up when you're already making money, when you're already valuable, so they have to do less work. And there's less agents now. So, in fact, we get emails sometimes like, hey, how do I get an agent? I said, don't worry about getting an agent. Get an audience.
Yeah.
Then you can get an agent after that when you don't really need them.
And this is another thing I wish I would have done just as a comedian is I didn't realize that I should have been acquiring a fan base when I first started doing stand-up. I was focused on, I got to get funny. You know, I started out, I got to get a funny 10 minutes, and now I got to get a funny half hour, and then I got to try to make the jump. You know, you start out emceeing, then you go to feature, and then you go to headliner. And I was focusing on that, which is a good thing. You need to focus on that. You need to know how to, you know, operate on stage. But I remember being such like a blue collar Chicago guy that like when I was featuring, I'd get off stage and I'd be in my car and gone before the headliner was done. And I didn't realize like I needed to cultivate fans, meet them, talk to them. Now, of course, this is pre-internet, so you couldn't just say, hey, they like me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter. You know, it took more effort, but still the biggest hurdle for anybody that's creative, but especially a comedian, is to get people to remember your name.
And the good news is it's easier now.
Oh, it's a thousand times. Yeah. When I hear young comics like, how do I do this? I'm like, dude, are you an idiot?
What? Do you have broadband or not?
Do you have electricity?
Yeah.
Like, because you got to understand, when we started, here's how you got famous. You got on The Tonight Show. If Johnny called you to the couch, then you got a sitcom. That was it. There was no, you got a funny YouTube video or any cable.
There weren't thousands of cable channels either.
Yeah. I mean, there was none of that stuff. So, and I just wish I would have spent more time. I mean, of course, you know, in the Midwest, you're going to these bars and there's a lot of drunks. And so sometimes you're like, I don't want to talk to these fucking idiots. But I wish I would have spent more time just, you know, being more open and more accessible. And now I really enjoy
just concentrate on the business. And one of the things, like you were saying, Graham, is like when you do it yourself, it becomes less of a chore because you're doing
you'd
it.
Love
you
love it, and you have because it's you have such a stake in it.
And although it's true that, like, you know, Graham and I have spent many hours in this garage yelling because we can't get the cart to work or we've lost an episode, and there's always that
I'm swearing at Skynet.
Yeah. Why the fuck? I don't get it. I don't get it. Why the fuck isn't this working? You know, that's happened a lot.
Yeah. It was just working. Why does it not work now? It fucking drives me nuts.
This is ridiculous. Call your friend at the Apple store.
God damn.
So, there's that. But that's all. I mean, but the point is, it's like, would you rather do that for you or for somebody else?
And I got to tell you, I mean, that's what I was just laughing about was like, and you know, we're still a small, we're not drawing paychecks or anything yet from this company. But I just looking back over the last 3-4 years, because we spent a year of just putting before the site even went live.
And then there was like 6 months when it was down.
Yeah, the site went down for 6 months. And so like I think of like all the mistakes and just the trial and error, but it was put like they're ours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you built your own house, it's my house. I built it. And okay, maybe some of the shit is crooked or whatever. It's got a leak. But it's still like we built this thing and it's so good. And that's what I would say. Getting back to the original question of mistakes that we made was, I would tell any young comic now, just get a fan base. Like, oh, I need to get on Conan or the Tonight Show or whatever. That's good. But honestly, building up starting your own YouTube channel.
Same thing with filmmakers, you know, make some stuff, put it up on YouTube, get a job in a production company.
Yeah.
You know, do all those things.
Mm-hmm. So those are the mistakes we made.
No, that's
some of them.
See, I think that's like a really good point, because just, you know, at Shriekfest, I was helping you guys last year and just kind of being nice and acknowledging the fans, it actually goes a long way. Just being nice, it's amazing what that can accomplish, because there's people that'll, you know, if you don't let this chick interview on your show, she's going to yell at you. It's like, well, next year I'm not going to let you.
I know. Yeah.
I'm not going to let you on the show. And if you want to yell at me again, guess what's going to happen the year after? Yes. You dizzy bitch. Just a little, I'm sorry, I got a little personal there. I apologize.
That's so great. You had some pent up shit from Shriekfest 2010. Yeah. It's all right.
And we were saying before the show, that same woman came back and yelled at Sean, the other intern.
That's the other thing too. Like
don't yell at the interns.
You don't have, and we talked about this in episode 84 with Dave and Derek, when they came up as PAs. And people were assholes to them, and they, now that they've been successful, like, you don't have to be an asshole. One of the things what Dave said was, and it bears repeating, is persistent without being annoying. Like, that's a good thing. And what's wrong with being nice? Like, don't you wanna, you know, I've worked on shows and stuff where everyone got along. And like agents and stuff would say, man, this is the exception to the rule. And I was always like, it doesn't have to be. You know what I mean? And
yeah, why is Tom Hanks the exception?
I know.
For people to work
he
with.
He shouldn't be the exception. Him and Spielberg shouldn't be the exception. That should be the rule. And getting back to the accessibility to fans, you know, the fans, without them, if they don't come to shows.
Or buy tickets.
Or buy tickets and buy drinks and buy CDs of acts and stuff like that, we don't have jobs. So you want them. You want them to be engaged. I mean, yeah, when you do shows in front of audiences that don't know who you are, and they're just like with their arms folded, like, who's this asshole? Well, then that can sometimes...
They're not quite as engaged.
Yeah, that sours you a little bit. But the fans, and that's the great thing about podcasting, is the fans are so much more involved. And they come to the comedy clubs and they're like, yeah.
And if someone's arms are crossed, we can't see it.
Yeah, we can't see it. So yeah, that's accessibility... is a key thing, and I like it. I want to, you know, one of the things we love about this is hearing the stuff on the message boards and from the fans and everything.
All right, next one.
Excellent. All right, well, big fan Japan. Sandy would like to know, when or how did you know you want to become a filmmaker? Was there any specific moment, film, or incident that inspired you?
I actually started making films at 13. I was in middle school, and we had like a special kind of program where we would go once a week to a class where we did like advanced activities, and one of them was filmmaking. So a buddy of mine, we actually, it was Dave Schmidt, who I'm still working with to this day.
Acapella
Audio.
Acapella Audio
is a sound designer. And
he did the sound on Afghanistan.
He did. Fantastic guy, and did all the sound of all my movies. And but we were 13 years old, and we made a stop motion movie called like The Blob. So it was like we took all our toys to school with and all these claymation, this blob, and we had to go around, eat houses, and fight the army. And then years later, I brought it back out, transferred it to DVD, and I had Dave create a new soundtrack for it and new music. Uh-huh. So it's actually on my DVD, Myopic Visions.
Oh, dude,
it's on the bottom. It's one of the early films, and it was the kind of thing where I'm like, yeah, this I can see myself doing this. So it was age 13.
I had a couple. When I was about 12 or 13, my brother and I made a movie. Our family. I was living in Madison, Wisconsin. And then we moved. Well, we would go vacation in northern Wisconsin, and then I moved to Chicago. But we would, with this other family, we would all go up there in the summer and to this place called Cherry Lodge up in Door County, Wisconsin. And so we had a Brownie Super 8 camera, and we it was in camera editing, but we shot a horror movie called Terror at Cherry Lodge. And I think I was
in camera editing, always got to get a little lucky.
Yeah, it's always it's so great. And I think I can't remember if my brother was like he was sort of the Jason creep guy that killed everyone at the lodge. You know, we had ketchup for blood and all that classic stuff. So we were always, and my parents were actors and stuff, were like theater people, so we were always performing. But to me, and then I went to college and I was a economics major for a semester because Michael J. Fox's character, Alex P. Keaton, that was his major. And I was like, oh, I want to be a business guy. You know, it's the 80s, and I'm like, I want to be a business guy. I want to be Bud Fox or whatever. And I chose economics. You would think that if I picked it from a fake TV character, that would give me a sign. But anyway, so I'm in my first semester of college, and I was at my buddy's house, and they were rerunning.
What happened when you watched Ultraman?
I was a superhero. I wanted to become radioactive and fight Godzilla. Anything I watched that changed my mind. Mary Poppins, I needed an umbrella that made me float. That was my minor. We were hanging out. This is at the University of Arizona with my friend Kevin Kelly, who I went to high school with. And we had ditched a... a MIS class, which was some computer program from a billion years ago. We blew it off. We're like, this class sucks. It was some big lecture hall, and they're talking about computer programming. We're just like,
I don't remember MIS.
Yeah, no one does.
No, that's fucking, sure? Yeah, sure it wasn't BASIC or Pascal?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, it was one of those.
Fortran?
Yeah, absolutely. And Management Information Systems was the name of the class. That's what stood for. But it covered all that bullshit, Pascal, right, and all that other stuff. And I knew then Skynet was going to attack. So we were watching, and they were rerunning on TV Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to make that scene where he sings Dunkashane in downtown Chicago, where I was from. I was
like, you wanted to just run on a float.
I wanted to run on a float. I've always wanted to run on a float. So I was like, I want to make that. And I immediately changed my major to film. And then I just knew I was going to be in entertainment. I joined a comedy. I started doing stand-up comedy the next semester. And that was it.
The rest is history.
The rest is history. Thank you, Big Fan Japan.
Fantastic. All right, guys. Kind of stemming from that question, Stephanie from Facebook wants to know, what were the first movies to make an impact on you both as a piece of art?
Godzilla?
As a piece of art. That's interesting. You know what? I think it was a director, actually. I think it was Ingmar Bergman. When I actually... when you started watching movies that like didn't have a lot of stuff blow up in them, or you know, because back then too you had a video store and you had VHS tapes, and most of it was just the new releases, and that's all you could really watch. You had to dig deep to find other interesting movies, and I think it was The Seventh Seal was probably, which is still probably one of my favorite films of all time. Citizen Kane 2, like when I discovered it, like obviously in film school, but ultimately I think it was Seventh Seal because it dealt with interesting things he'd never seen before. It was like the nature of man and death personified. And that was the first time I'd ever seen things like that. Like almost like supernatural visualizations of complex metaphysical topics, if that makes any fucking sense.
yeah, whatever, hippie. Yeah.
But that's, and that's what really, I think, started me on the path to, hey, film can be so much more.
You know, I was lucky that my parents would sort of, I mean, take me to,
hippies.
They were hippies. And so they took me to like R-rated movies and stuff like that when I was probably way too young, you know what I mean? But in terms of, so they sort of, you know, especially my dad was always just like, because he was a theater professor, was always just like, all right, watch this. What do you think about it? You know, like he would really.
But Dad, this is Blade Runner.
Yeah. Like, it's more than that. I think the first time I sat in a movie theater and was like, these images are breathtaking was
Cannonball Run.
Cannonball Run 2. The DeLuises have always had a skill that. Yeah, it was Dom DeLuise and Fatso. It was just amazing. No, was, and I list this a lot, I talk about this movie a lot, which is The Gray Fox with Richard Farnsworth. And also The Natural came out right around that same time when I visually was like, oh my God. And I was like, I was 10, 11, whatever. And just like these images, like, took my breath away. And that's when I was like, this is beautiful. This is art. And my parents, when I was a little kid living in Germany, they took us to museums all the time. And at the time I was like, I don't want to go to museums. But I think they were smart.
Is that what you sounded like as a kid?
Yeah, exactly. that's my weird voice. So yeah, that was when they were forcing an appreciation of art upon us and it worked. And that's when I visually was like, these movies are visually breathtaking.
All right. Let's see. Are there any movies Brett Dyer from Facebook would like to know, new or old, that you refuse to see?
Oh, well.
Jack and Jill.
Transformers 1 through 58.
But you've already seen them.
Yeah.
Or no, which one did you see? You saw?
I've never seen a Transformers movie.
Really?
Nope.
Oh, see, I've seen all three. And I'm worse for it. I really think, you know, my soul is not the same as it used to be.
It's like when you kill someone, they say it affects your soul.
But what was the question again?
Are there any movies that you refuse to see?
Oh, it was definitely Jack and Jill, and I would probably say Sex and the City 2.
I would see Sex and the City 2 or Jack and Jill. I would sit through an Adam Sandler marathon before seeing 9 minutes of Transformers.
Wow. We should try that. Let's see if that ends up being true. All right, maybe that's our next fundraiser for charity. Fundraiser.
Graham being tortured.
Yeah, by Adam Sandler Film Fest. As long for every movie you watch, we raise more money.
All right, kind of on that same vine, there's a new Roman Polanski movie coming out. Are you guys able to separate the art from the artist, or is there, you know, any particular, you know, actor, director that you say, you know what, can't do it?
Yeah, Polanski is a tough one because...
Great question. Since I've already seen the movie, I would have to say I can separate it.
Right. I've really gone back and forth with Polanski because, he is a good filmmaker, and yes, he raped a teenage girl. So,
and didn't pay for it. I mean, if he actually did the jail time, I'd actually
I could feel a little better about it. The way his court case was handled, he did not get a fair trial, and then he skipped. So, and I'm not excusing him for what he did. And he also saw his pregnant wife was murdered by the Manson family. And that doesn't excuse what he did to that teenage girl, but I don't know. I remember when I saw The Pianist in the theaters and I was like, wow, this is beautiful. And then all this stuff was coming out about that. And I was like, oh man, I don't know if I want to give this guy my money. But I don't know.
But then Ghost Rider came out.
And then did he direct Ghost Rider?
Ghost Rider, yeah. The Ghost Rider, yeah.
Rider.
Not Ghost Rider.
Oh, I was like, what? He did that shitty Nicolas Cage movie based on that obscure comic?
Let him burn over in Europe then. Never mind.
Jesus Christ. That's the crime.
So, and I'll tell you, you can always tell too, like, you know, the Carnage is actually, you know, set in Manhattan, but you know, they weren't in Manhattan shooting it.
Yeah.
You know, that was set somewhere
you know,
Europe.
What? As I was thinking about it, you know,
well, Mel Gibson's another great example. What do you like, you know, how do you feel? Would you watch a Mel Gibson movie?
But that's the thing. I think it's different though. He is his personal beliefs I don't like.
But he didn't hurt another human being.
He hurt another human being.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
okay,
I think,
good point. Fair point.
You know, and I think with, you know, at the time of this recording right now, Carnage isn't even in the theaters yet. You saw a press screening. And when you were talking about it on that episode, I was just thinking about all this shit that's going on with Penn State. So by the time this episode airs, who knows where that's going to be. But as it is today, November 15th, I'm sickened by what happened at Penn State. And I'm sickened by the cover-up. And
everyone should be.
Yeah, everyone should be. And I'm sickened at the... It comes down to money. You know, Joe Paterno is a great football coach, but if this scandal comes out, it's going to hurt recruiting. It's going to hurt ads. And I wonder, like, is that been some of the motivation for the fact that Polanski still gets work? His movies are going to sell box tickets. And if
I don't know, because there's no real American studios that are funding his work.
Right.
I mean, it's all European, you know, money. It's not like Paramount's going, we need another Roman Polanski movie.
No, but I mean, he still is.
But they are distributing.
They are distributing.
Yeah,
I mean, The Pianist was a big movie that won big awards. And, you know, when this whole Penn State thing, I was like, if I was a Penn State fan, I would burn my jersey and my tickets.
The best thing Roman Polanski can do is he should settle. He should come back to the States, face the charges and just put it behind him.
Yeah.
But at this point, I doubt that's going to happen.
He just came and said, all right, I'll serve whatever the jail time
is. Right.
I'll do it, you know.
And then with overcrowding, he probably wouldn't be even in there.
Yeah, if it was California, he's going to be, you know, and you know. So it's a complex. So I don't know that I'm going to, if I'm going to be so adamant about not supporting Penn State in college football, then I guess I would be hypocritical if I were to go buy a movie ticket with a movie that he made.
But you've seen movies he's made.
I have. Mm-hmm. I have. Mm-hmm. I definitely have. And they're good movies.
Yeah.
Joe Paterno's a good football coach.
Yeah.
But Hitler was a good motivator.
All right.
Maybe Mengele was a good doctor.
Yeah. Goebbels was good at extracting information. Yeah. He was really good at that.
All right. Let's see here. Mark Cartinson would like you to name a movie you love from a director you hate, and then name a movie you hate from a director you love.
I actually thought about this one. I have an answer for this one. Night Shift by Ron Howard, because I can't stand Ron Howard. But I like that movie, Night Shift. And then Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Tim Burton. That was a huge piece of shit, and I love Tim Burton.
Any remake by Tim Burton.
Any remake by Tim Burton, you have to avoid. Category. And I always thought it was an inside joke. It's like, all right, you want me to do a remake? Here's what's going to happen. And he would fuck it up deliberately and make it a piece of shit. It's like, all right, now don't ask me to do a remake anymore. And somebody asked him to do a remake again. Like, look, you're not getting the joke. All right, I'm going to make another shitty one until you stop asking me. And they keep asking him to do remakes.
Wow,
he was doing an Oz one.
I can't know that I can pinpoint. I guess for...
What about The Rock? Did you like that movie?
That was made by Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock. Oh, boy. It's all right.
Okay, we're getting somewhere.
That's an okay movie. It's an okay action entertainment movie. I'm not sure why Anthony Clark is just the gay hairdresser for no reason in there. Like, that's just so just shoehorned in there.
I don't think Anthony Clark's a gay hairdresser for no reason.
Hey, I'm not going to say anymore.
Well, that's what Michael Bay does, though. He literally shoves in these ridiculous characters for no reason. Like, one of the Transformers movies had Dr. Ken Jeong in it for, like, two or three scenes that was completely shoehorned in that made no sense and completely unnecessary. But that's actually one of his staples of horrible filmmaking. He'll put in, like, this crazy character for one or two scenes that makes no sense.
I guess I'm picking The Rock. And then what's a movie that was made by a director that I love that they did a shitty thing?
Yeah.
Probably AI. I really like Spielberg, and Artificial Intelligence is just a
pick. Oh, that was a good pick.
Yeah.
That was a horrible movie.
Yeah,
too.
It's a horrible movie. It's a horrible movie.
All right. Moving on. Let's see here. What is your favorite childhood movie, and what does your grown-up self think of that movie?
Well, that's interesting because I just wrote the one of the chapters for the book on family movies, and I went through some of the ones that I enjoyed and actually showing to my kids. I have two. I have Labyrinth by actually George Lucas produced that movie with Jim Henson.
When did that come out?
That came out early 80s, I think.
I would say.
And it was the kind of movie that it's very dated now when you watch it, but ultimately it still has that Henson magic to it. And Jennifer Connelly is really good in it. And let me put it this way. It holds up if you get past the dated nature of it and some of the production. And the other one is, I would have to say, same exact thing was Neverending Story. I watched that over and over as a kid, and now I have my kids watch it, and they really like it too. But again, dated effects and all that stuff. But ultimately, the story is what really grips you.
Yeah, I remember Labyrinth scaring me to death as a child. And then now I love it. But I remember I couldn't get through it as a kid. It scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, it had a couple creepy things in it. And some very goofy things, David Bowie in really tight pants. With a giant wig.
Really? Bowie was in a crazy outfit?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
That's insane.
It was like... He's like, oh, you're in costume. He's like, no, I just came this way.
This is how I showed up
on the set.
He was just walking by. He was on the back lot. Yeah. And they were like, hello,
just getting
sir.
Coffee.
I was craft services today. It's horrible. It's like bad Flight of the Conchords, what I just did. God, for me, I think it would have to be maybe the Muppet movie, the original Muppet movie. Say the whole question again.
Why are you such a moron?
I don't think that's what the question was.
Okay, Rick Perry, what is your favorite childhood movie, and what does your grown-up self think of that movie?
Rick Perry. The Muppet movie is, it's an amazing movie. I remember just like the singing. I grew up with the Muppets, and then seeing them out in the world outside of Sesame Street was so cool. And if you go back and watch it, the Muppets were great. Like, the Muppet TV show is hilarious, and the jokes in it were great. And Orson Welles is, at the end of the movie, I'm going to give you a big time celebrity millionaire contract or whatever it's called. And the songs, like Rainbow Connection.
That's your standard rich and famous contract.
Yeah, that's what it is. The standard rich and famous contract. And like those movies, and like Rainbow Connection and It's Not Easy Being Green. I still, like, It's Not Easy Being Green is one of those great, like, you know, telling a kid if you feel weird, it's okay. Like when Rosie Grier told me it's all right to cry on Free to Be You and Me. Yes, I'm a child of the 70s. My parents played that for us at a key party. No. My dad was in his clogs smoking a pipe.
It was just like the ice storm.
It was just like the ice storm, directed by Ang Lee. The Muppet movie is, to me, my adult self looks back on it and goes, God, that was so great. And it reminds me of like wonderful aspects of my childhood.
So we'll see how the movie is.
Yeah. Yeah.
We may have already seen it by now, depending on when this
the
episode
new
drops.
One.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
The new one. We'll see. I go old school.
All right. Jeff Bayer on Facebook wants to know, what is the worst movie going experience you've ever had?
Well, that's a tough one. I had a year or two ago, I had a really bad one. I went to see Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. And the problem is, too, these smaller chain movie theaters, they're deteriorating. They're literally falling apart.
Yeah.
And they're going to be replaced by nothing or the high-end chains, and that's it. But the problem with these chains is they don't even try. First of all, I had trouble buying a ticket for the movie. Looking around, there's nobody in the ticket window. So you have to go inside of the snack bar. They're also selling you the tickets. And then they don't know where the movie is. So they have no idea which theater it's in. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking around. I find the movie. I sit down. You know, no stadium seating. Everything's dirty. It's disgusting. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I sit down. Movie starts completely out of focus. So this movie completely out of focus. So I'm thinking, oh, well, they'll fix it. It's clearly somebody's
sure,
watching,
of course.
You know, and nothing.
Percy.
Five minutes goes by. I'm like, okay, well, this must not be an effect. This must be just someone. This is not the soft
you
focus
it was
lens.
The beginning of that scene in Crooklyn where he goes and visits his parents or whatever, aunt and uncle or something.
So I'm like, all right, well, this is. I get up. I have to tell the guy that, you know, because there aren't that many people in the movie theater. And a couple of other people sitting there just were going to tough it out, I think. So I get up. Another guy gets up, and British guy. And he goes to me, this is absolutely appalling, isn't it?
He sounds more like he's Chinese.
Yeah, see, that's, well, he might have been, you know, Northern China.
He's Northern Chinese. Yeah, that sounds right.
So I get out, and again, there's the one guy that sold me the ticket, and I go, "It's the movie's blurry." And he looks at me like, "Well, what do you want me to do about it?"
Open your eyes, asshole.
And he just literally looked around and tried to figure out what to do. So I think he went into all the different projection booths and finally fixed it. It was about almost 30 minutes into the movie.
Oh, there was a movie theater in Chicago when I lived in Logan Square, which I don't know what the neighborhood's like now, but at the time, it was not that great of a neighborhood.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention the Percy Jackson and Lightning Thief, better blurry.
So get the wrong prescription glasses and go enjoy
You'll
that
You'll enjoy
gym.
It more, yeah.
There was this theater in Chicago that was like a discount theater, and I remember going in there in the summer, and like, the air conditioning wasn't working that well, and it was leaking, and it was like a hot, muggy day. And like, so you heard dripping, and you were hot, and it fucking smelled like a goddamn gym locker room. It was horrifying, and I don't even remember what. I think I saw Babe Ruth or something, the John Goodman. It was just something. I was just like, oh, God, this is fucking awful. And then, like, I remember, like, whatever, and then just classic people talking, and, you know, this is before cell phones, so I don't. They're just talking. They're just dumb. And I remember that, and I think, like, I started to get sick because of the smell, and that's what I remember. And just being like that, the minute that question was asked, I was like, oh, like the smell came back.
Oh, a little memory?
Yeah,
memory
a little memory flare. So thanks for bringing that up, fucking Jim or Jeff.
All right. Just kind of in that same vein for movie etiquette, speaking of people talking, what's your, do you guys, are you hardline? Because there's that, you know, that kind of that YouTube thing about the Alamo Draft House in Austin, yeah, where, you know, that
let me cut to the chase here. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
shut the fuck up. That's all you got to do in a movie theater. You're out in a movie theater, shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
that's all you have to do.
I just went to go see the Rum Diaries a couple weeks ago, and I like to sit alone in the back
in a trench coat
and I do they're stretching exercises.
Yes, you paid your money, it's your business.
I paid my money, you know what I mean? If I want to get out a nooner, I can.
You want to pull a Pee Wee Herman?
If I want to, in my big house, what?
I want to throw a menu.
So this, the credits come on, and this woman goes, ah, Johnny Depp, and I went, you're not in your home, be quiet. And that was, we never heard from her again. So I'll let you talk during the previews, all right, but when the credits start, I go about 30 to 60 seconds in, and then I'm gonna go, please be quiet. I'm not gonna go shh, I'm gonna go stop. I'm gonna say, or I'll probably just go stop talking. I'll usually do it in that manner.
Fantastic. What about texting? Are we down on texting?
I hate texting. Yeah. This actually, and this happened. The thing that irritates me too is when you're in one of the higher end movie theaters, you're paying more for a ticket. You're paying like $13, $14, yeah. which is ridiculous. Yeah. But we pay it because you get a better experience. And I was watching Drag Me to Hell, and these two idiot teenagers come and sit next to me, and they start texting like through most of the movie. And finally, I went to one of them. Just go out the lobby. Go out the lobby. Why are you texting in the movie? Go out to the lobby. And they left. They went to the lobby. They came back. They started. One of them wanted to text, and she didn't know what to do. She went to her friend and went, I don't know what to do. No one's ever told me that I couldn't do something before. Oh, it was that thing out of thing. It was like, this has never happened before. What but I always do just do whatever I want, wherever I am. I don't know what my whole world is crumbling. And yeah, so shut the fuck up and stop texting. You know, shut anything. And they even say that at the ArcLight. Don't turn your phones on. You know, anything that makes a light or a noise, keep off or go into the lobby.
Sweet Lord Baby Jesus invented voicemail for a reason. You know, text these assholes later. Nothing that you're texting about is important. Your lives are stupid.
Yes.
So you have nothing to nothing of value to say to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed. I will third that. All right. All right. Other than movies, what do you guys nerd out over?
You know what? We do different things, actually. I caught Graham here once measuring his foot for samurai shoes.
Just went because I had a pair that like I ordered a pair and they were the wrong size and I was like, oh, I gotta mail them. And then I go, can I get the ruler? He goes, yeah. And Chris is like fiddling, he's like going through the inventory in the office, and he sees me and he goes, are you measuring your shoes? Are you measuring your feet for samurai shoes? I go, that's exactly what I'm doing, Chris.
So, yeah, you saw, you read that right.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. Your brain is correct.
That's why you go to the store for samurai shoes. You don't get that online.
Yeah, you got to try them on.
Yeah.
But I actually, I do video games and comic books. Those are the things I still do. And I just got Red Dead Redemption that I'm really enjoying. Western game. First Western game I've ever played. Really fun.
Yeah, I train with my samurai sword every morning on the roof of my building, and there's construction guys next door who are like, what the fuck is this guy's problem? I look like a crazy man. I'm in like a surf hoodie, and then I'm swinging a sword around on the roof of a building. I look insane.
Are you in your American flag sweatpants?
Oh, God, I should start to do that and just yell, Wolverines! From the original Red Dawn. So, yeah, that's what we nerd out about.
All right. Fantastic. I almost want to just end there. Samurai booties and nowhere to go but down from samurai booties. But let's.
They're actually called tabbies is the samurai footwear.
Much better. That sounds much better.
Yeah, much more masculine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The gloves are called Pomeranians, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they're spoofy Pomeranians.
All right. Well, the last question we have comes from Ashley Meeservin. You guys have touched on this before, but I don't think it'd be said enough. She asks, what can moviegoers do to stop the film juggernaut from continuously releasing the same BS over and over again? How can we stop the Katherine Heigl projects?
You know, it's a very simple solution. Stop going to see them.
Yeah.
You vote with your dollar, really. It's, you know, eventually Hollywood will get the message. It's like, I deserve better. And that's what you'll finally tell them.
The companies are just going to go where the money is. So if you're
remember, they're run by marketing departments now. That's really what it is. It's tentpole stuff. It's all like, we got the most bang for our buck. And, you know, there are certain movies that will hit the other audiences that care about movies, but ultimately the marketing departments are going to control where the big money movies go and what gets made. Like Jennifer Aniston is always going to have a romantic comedy coming out every year.
Don't go see them. Don't watch them. Don't give a nickel to those movies. Don't download them. Don't do anything with that. And like a great example is when VHS came out, the movie industry so resisted it, so hard they resisted it. And then they realized, oh, wait, this is another revenue stream for us. So if there's money to be made, if well-made movies make money, they'll make more of them.
And here's the great thing. It's going the other way. We've seen that with the comic book movies. Now, normally, every once in a while, you get a good comic book movie and then you get a bunch of crap. It's reversed. We got one really crappy movie, comic book movie, Green Lantern, but everything else was decent to really good.
Yes. X-Men,
Captain America, Thor, they were all either good or great. And it's great to see that. I mean, and I hope that trend continues. I mean, and that when you get a movie like Dark Knight, you know, that's like, oh, okay, these movies can be really good and popcorn movies and make a fortune. Star Trek, another great example. Other than Matt Weinhold, we all really enjoyed it.
Matt Weinhold's the lone holdout. But no, you're making an excellent point because the executives go to Comic-Con. They see fans, how loyal they are and all the merchandise that they buy, and they're like, you know, and they feel the backlash when they piss off the fans.
Yeah, we want another X-Men First Class, not a Jonah Hex.
Yeah, exactly, because it's like, I bet you they made millions of dollars of Jonah Hex merch that nobody bought because everyone went, fuck this piece of shit. And when something is great, the fans grab onto it so hard, you know, it's Christopher Nolan is doing his third Batman movie for a reason. They're successful financially. One of the reasons why they're successful financially, they're great movies, and comic book fans, especially Batman fans, are so loyal to these movies. I'm one of those people. You know what I mean? And that's what you can do. And I think, honestly, especially as we're in a country that's in a recession and there's all this Occupy Wall Street and everyone's kind of this backlash against greed and corporations, you need to vote with your dollars at every turn. Know that everything you buy, every decision you make, there's an impact, and you have a chance to positively impact stuff you like and want to support, not just movies, anything. I mean, you want to buy products that are made from some asshole corporation, you know, and when you stop buying them, I mean, people started taking their money out of big banks and putting them into credit unions and stuff. If enough people do that,
it goes all the way to food too. Like if you watch that movie Food Inc., there was a demand for better food. People wanted more organic food, and then all of a sudden, the corporations like Walmart, like, oh, we'll start to carry it and make it easier for you to get.
Big supermarket chains are carrying organic food and stuff like that. Like it's because of consumer demand. The market can drive it. So
don't think you're powerless. You're not. I mean, in any aspect, from entertainment to what you eat.
Anything you buy. You don't want products that are made by slave labor in third world countries. Don't. Like, I just made the decision that my Palm Strike shirts, I just started buying shirts that are made in America, because I'm like, I'm being hypocritical if I'm bitching at these big corporations and then I'm buying shirts that are made in Honduras or Sri Lanka or something like that.
And we're going to do that with the Comedy Film Nerd shirts too. Yeah. We actually, once we run out of these, we're going to go all American made. And those of you that are listening to this broadcast working in a sweatshop in Pakistan, it's nothing personal.
No, you guys do great work.
You do great work, but we're going to go American made, and it'll be more expensive for us, but we think that's okay.
We're not going to increase our prices.
No, but it's the right thing to do.
And that's just a decision Chris and I made, because we're voting with our dollars.
And we don't like making salaries.
And we love working for free. No, we've been selling American-made meth for a while now, and it's quite a big profit margin.
All right, gentlemen, that wraps up the submitted questions.
This was great.
Why don't we do one of these a year?
Yeah, at the end of the year, we'll take your questions.
I'm sure you guys will have more questions by then. Yeah,
this is your end-of-the-year chance to
take your fucking shots.
No, this is great. Those are really great questions, you guys, and one of the things we love doing about this is we love hearing what you guys have to say, and when you put your opinions on the message boards and these questions.
We love interacting with you guys.
It's great.
We really do. It's really, and we love seeing you guys engage, and we love mixing it up too. You guys don't agree with us? Great. You know, put it on Facebook or the message boards. You know, we read everything too.
Yeah, we know when you're stupid.
Yeah.
And when fans come up after shows and stuff, and like I've had discussions and even debates about movies with fans after shows, and I absolutely love that.
That's great.
Because you guys always keep it civil and cool and nice and fun, and realize we're just talking about movies and nobody gets bent out of shape, and it's excellent. So I think on the iPhone app, folks, if you don't have the iPhone, get it, because
Droid.
Or BlackBerry, if they haven't gone out of business.
I doubt it. Yeah, I wouldn't count on us being on BlackBerry right now.
iPad.
Sure.
How iPad. About that?
Yeah, nice job.
Ben the intern is going to give some of his picks on the iPhone app.
Yes. So. Are you going to include Wild Target?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Ben loves that movie.
You love Wild Target?
Oh, nuts about it. Just nuts about it.
I saw it. It's not bad. It's entertaining.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Ben, what upcoming films are you actually looking forward to?
Let's see. I actually am kind of looking forward to the Muppets movie because I was never really a Muppets fan when I was little. I was not, for whatever reason, it just didn't hook me. So I'm kind of interested. I kind of want to get in, you know, in this rebirth. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to it just to see what they're going to do about it. And I'm, you know, obviously anxiously awaiting the next Batman movie.
That's sure. I mean, aren't we all?
Everything else is just filler until that comes out. Man.
Straight up. All right. Well, that's our very special year-end Get to Know the Nerds show. Yeah,
absolutely.
We just coined a term. Yeah. Come on.
And we want to thank you guys for all your support and listening and supporting us in the store. And that's really, like we say, spend, you know, we're in the Christmas season right now, so spend at least $20 a year and you'll really help us out.
And honestly, you guys, 2011 was a great year for the site and for the show. And we got to accomplish a lot of really cool things. And 2012, you know, the book's going to come out. We want to do more live shows on the road. And
it's going to be a big year for us next year.
It's going to be
a big year. With you guys, because of you guys.
Because of you guys. You guys have supported Lafghanistan and all of our other projects. And we're going to be making more of our own stuff for you guys. And we do it because we love it and we know you guys love it. So thank you guys so much for a great year.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you guys for having me. This
Absolutely.
Was fantastic.
Excellent. So my name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember
Han shot first.